reminded the believers that they were living in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, and that they should shine as lights in the world. Can you relate to that as you seek to represent your Savior today? Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliott, helping you to run the race of life each day with an eternal view. Here's Elizabeth.
Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Guide me in your truth and teach me, for you are God my Savior, and my hope is in you all day long. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott. I've just read a prayer from Psalm 25, verses 4 and 5. And my guest again today is Robin Davis. And at the end of our program yesterday, she got into an area that she says is not her field, teaching little children to obey by the time they're about 6 months old. Well, I said, what do you mean it's not your field? You've raised five children beyond the age of 6 months. Then you started to tell me a story about my mother, and I thought, well, we need to hear that on the radio.
I was remembering very fondly a time when your mother came to visit me after our first child, Nathaniel, had been born, and she brought a little pair of booties that she had knit for him. And I appreciated that so much. And I was holding Nathaniel, and he started reaching for my glasses and pulling them off. And she simply commented, you know, you can teach him not to do that. And that was a real revelation to me, that at that very young age, I could teach him to obey and to not do something that he really shouldn't do, namely mess with my glasses.
So how are you supposed to teach him?
You would start with saying no in a firm voice, I think.
Looking him straight in the eye?
Well, you've developed that so well on your programs before, and I think eventually it might come to using having a little spanking, a little slap on the on the hand, you know, fairly gentle at that age. But they really can learn the meaning of don't touch at age 6 months. I do remember teaching Nathaniel.
So you actually taught him not to grab your glasses.
Right.
Well, what I saw when we had dinner at your house, Robin, was obedient children in a very ordered home. And I know that it can't be that way every minute of every day, but the proof of the pudding, I think, is when there are guests and when there's a special occasion. If you can bring things under control at such a time, it's not that the kids are hypocritical and putting on a front. They obviously knew how to behave at the table, and they were very polite to me and my grandchildren. Well, back to the subject of homeschooling, which is what we've been talking about during this week, how long are you planning to do this?
We always are asked this question, and my answer is always, we plan to do it a year at a time. We've been saying that for 10 years, and here we are still doing it.
And Nathaniel is in what grade?
He's in ninth grade. I think it's best to have a humble attitude toward how long you plan to do homeschooling. As James says in James 4:15, if it is the Lord's will, we will do this or that. If it is the Lord's will, we will do homeschooling next year. I don't know how my health is going to be or what sorts of family circumstances. I think if a mom were to give birth to triplets, for example, it may be that, or if you had to go through chemotherapy or some other great crisis in your life, there might be some reasons why you would have to stop. Or you might realize that some other circumstance would be better for your children. So we really do try and take it a year at a time.
Well, I appreciate that. It's the attitude that Valerie has when people say, how many children do you plan to have? I don't think Valerie ever sat down and said, I will have X number of children, period, case closed, you know, and when I've got that many, then that's going to be it. Okay, another question. Can parents who don't have degrees in all these subjects that children need to study teach the children what they need to know?
They certainly can, and there's some real encouragement here. There have been studies done on, there are now enough homeschoolers that there are psychologists who are studying homeschoolers, and they have found that homeschoolers do very well. And I have some test results. All the studies have found homeschoolers to do as well or better than public schools. One study of 1,516 families found that children scored at or above the 80th percentile in all subject areas on standardized achievement tests. Now, the average nationwide is the 50th percentile, so you see they're 30 points above average. They've also found that there is no correlation between whether the mother has a teaching degree and the children's achievement.
So it doesn't really matter at all.
Mm-mm.
That's interesting.
It doesn't. Now, there are many areas that when you start out, you say, how can I teach algebra? And that's all, people always bring up algebra when you're talking about maybe a six-year-old. But, you know, it's very interesting. I was giving a talk recently on homeschooling, and an algebra teacher came up to me, and she wondered, how can I possibly teach my second grader? And I thought, well, this is really a turnabout. Here's a very well-educated, competent algebra teacher, and she wonders how could she possibly teach her own two sons at home.
And she's not talking about teaching algebra to a second grader.
No,
she's just talking about teaching a second grader what a second grader needs to know.
Right. And that when you start out with homeschooling, especially if you start from the beginning, you're talking about phonics and simple math and handwriting and reading lots of library books to them. It's a very scaled-down, simple program. You're not talking about analytical geometry and physics and chemistry.
So if you can read and write yourself, you ought to be able to homeschool.
You should. And parents have two definite qualifications. One is the God-ordained role that we have over our children, that we are their parents. God has said, children, obey your parents in the Lord. And fathers, bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, or the discipline and instruction of the Lord, so that God commands us to teach our children. Now, the Bible doesn't say you have to teach your children math, but we are placed in that God-ordained role as our children's teacher. But a lot of parents don't use that authority. I think they're intimidated by all the experts, by all the psychology and the psychobabylon secular radio talk shows and TV shows, and parents fear to say no to their children lest they damage their children's tender egos. And they're specialists in every area. So how could I, as a non-specialist, teach my children? So people are intimidated by that. But then I think there's another qualification that parents have that's unique, and that is that as a parent, you know your child more intimately and expertly than any teacher or any other expert can know them. You know your children, you love them, and you're with them year after year, so you have that continuity. So you have that motivation that I think makes up for maybe a lack of knowledge. And through good curriculum materials and teacher's guides, you can make up for the lack in your own knowledge.
It makes a lot of good sense to me because, as you know, Robin, I lived with Jungle Indians, and they had no idea of education in any formal sense whatsoever. And yet their children learned to do everything that an adult man or woman had to do. And I would say that most of them were real experts by the time they were 9 or 10 years old. The women wove hammocks and planted manioc and caught fish with their hands, which meant that any six-year-old child was learning those things and fairly good at it, a whole lot better than I was. In fact, my 3-year-old daughter learned to catch fish with her hands in no time at all, and she learned the language much faster than I did. The fact that those Indians never were separated from their parents, the little girls were always with their mothers, the boys were always with their fathers, learning how to hunt, how to fish, how to spear things, how to cut down trees, it made them the most secure people in the world. And I think that there is a security, which of course brings up the other question. People think, oh, those poor Davis kids, they never get to be with anybody else. They must be such an ingrown society. What about socialization?
Well, that's the classic question, and we find that people often ask us that rather than what about academics, which I think is a reflection on American society, that we're more concerned about fitting in than about maybe academic excellence. I'm concerned about both socialization and academic excellence. Our children do have numerous opportunities to be with other children: Sunday school, church youth group, camp, town sports, neighborhood friends, homeschool support group field trips and group classes. But let's face it, socialization is a two-edged sword. Children can learn many good things from other children, but they can also learn bad things. And so I think we have to look carefully at what sort of socializing influences they're having from other children. Webster defines socialization as to adjust or make fit for cooperative group living. Now, who is best able to make our children fit for cooperative group living? 25 other 12-year-old boys or godly parents?
Well, that is a huge question. People are always worrying about socialization. I would testify that the Davis children were socially very adept, very well taught, and I felt very comfortable as a guest in their home. They passed things very politely at the table. They sat at the table. I was impressed with that, Robin, that your children sat at the table quietly, and I didn't see anybody leave the table without saying, "May I please be excused?"
Well, we're still in process. And I want the listeners to know that we are seven sinners living at the Davis household. We're seven sinners, definitely still in process, and it's only by the grace of God that there's any good coming out of our home.
But is my conclusion correct that you do have, at least you have a family rule, whether it's kept all the time or not, I don't know, but it was that night, that you don't leave the table without saying, "May I please be excused?"
Yes, and they usually say thank you for dinner first. And Jack sets that example. He always thanks me for dinner, and the children do too.
That is extremely important. Well, I certainly hope that the fathers that are listening heard that last bit. You have no idea how powerful your influence is just in what you do, which is far more important than what you say. Well, thank you. My guest today has been Robin Davis, and she will be back with me again.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.